Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Megillah, Daf, Zion. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We open up our shiur in the middle of a discussion. To recap the main point that serves as the lead-in to today's shiur, is Shitas Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, that with regard to a leap year, two Adors, Ador Aleph and Ador Beis, one must fulfill the chiyuv, the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, during the second Ador. In fact, in addition to Mikra Megillah, we have other halachas that the Gemara had spoken about in the previous sugya that must be fulfilled in Adar Sheni. In other words, even if one, let us say, for example, read the Megillah in Adar Rishon, first Adar, he has to read it again in Adar Sheni. The sources for that, we saw two psukim were quoted in the Gemara. One pasuk was B'chol Shana V'Shana, and the other pasuk was Likayim es Igeris Apurim Hazos Hashenis. The Gemara, with which we concluded our previous shir, had mentioned that we need both sources. And with that, we continue on Zayin Omad Aleph, the second line from the top. Why do I need both sources? De'i mibachol shana v'shana. If I had just that pasuk, Have amino, I would have thought, ki kushyon, that just like every year, the Ador in which one performs the mitzvahs is the Ador that's right after Shvat. So too in the leap year, I would have thought, you are supposed to do the mitzvahs in the first Ador. We have a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Vav Amud Beis. This connects you to a parallel star, three lines from the bottom, on Vav Amud Beis, where there's an indication to look at Zayin Omad Aleph. So it was at that point that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi had cited his shita of you read during the first Ador, learning from the pasuk of Bechol Shana V'Shana, and adding to that point the idea or the obligation of Ein Mavirin Ala Mitzvahs, that if you have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, you do it at the first opportunity. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi had darshan B'chol Shana V'Shana to his own advantage, namely, to teach me first Ador, coupled with the idea of Ein Mavirin Ala Mitzvahs. As we just said, you don't pass over the chance to do a mitzvah. So that would have led me to think Ador Rishon. Therefore, if I would have had just the Pasuk of B'chol Shana V'Shana, that would not have been sufficient in helping the cause of Rabbi Shimon Leo to focus me on Ador Sheni. Therefore, komash melon hashenis. Therefore, we need the second pasuk that says hashenis in it, which points me, directs me to the second ador. V'yashminin hashenis. If I would have had just that pasuk, havamino lechadchila barishon u'besheni. I would have thought hashenis is telling me that really the best thing would be to do betchila means lechadchila, to do the mitzvah in both Adors, Ador Rishon and Ador Sheni. Komash Malon, Bechol Shana V'Shana. Therefore, I need the pasuk of Bechol Shana V'Shana, which tells me, like every year, just like every year, we do it only in one Ador, because there is only one Ador, so too, in a leap year, you'll do the mitzvahs only once. The Gemara now turns to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, who had mentioned, whose opinion is that you do the mitzvahs during the first Ador. For Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, Hai Hashenis my Ovidle, what does Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi learn from the pasuk that was cited to benefit Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? Mi boy alei, lichad Rabbi Shmuel bar Yehuda, he needs it for Rabbi Shmuel's teaching. The Omer of Shmuel bar Yehuda, Betchila Kavua B'Shushan. The first year when the miracle happened, the celebration was established in the location that the miracle took place, namely in Shushan. Ulubasof, Bechol Ha'olam Kulo. And the following year was then established all over wherever Jews are located. And that Ulubasof comment is what we mean, Shenis, meaning the second time or the next year it was then established to be practiced all over. The background to this idea is now presented in the Gemara itself. That's why we've written in between the lines the word Rekha. Rekha means background. Before we go further, we just want to point out that as we go on in the Gemara, we're going to notice a new geometric form. And in our Gemara markings, the geometric form is one of the mainstays of our system. It represents a series or an attempt to connect two ideas through the appearance of a geometric form, and then you look for a similar one, and you thereby connect the two points, two or more. In this case, we have a Roman numeral number 1 and 2 that go along with this discussion, and on the outside margin, as we attempt to do a daf after daf in our marking system, we try to provide a topic heading and called Nosei, and a structural note called Mivneh. Sometimes we combine the two, as we do in this case. So you'll notice in the outside margin the Nosei Mivneh heading, and you notice the crown form is illustrated with a 1 and 2 next to it. The words that are enclosed in these forms in this sukkah are Kavuni, Kisvuni, where Esther asks the Chachamim to establish her and write her Lidoros for future generations. This represents Bakoshas Esther Lios Lidoros, Esther's request to be commemorated generation after generation. We will see, we'll deal with Yom Tov Ulekriya, the celebration of it as a holiday and the reading of the Megillah. And point number two, Ksuva Ke'echot Mikisvei HaKodesh. She also wants to have her story, the Megillas Esther, recorded as a book amongst the Sifrei Tanakh, amongst the holy writings, the Kisvei HaKodesh. Now, turning to the Gemara. Omar of Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Shocha Lahem Esther Lachachomem. Esther had sent a request to the rabbis, Kavuni Lidoros, establish me for generations. And Rashi points out that it is a reference to as a Yom Tov, as a holiday, and the Kriya, and to be read. Rashi adds an interesting expression, Lios Li L'Shem, that I should, it should be remembered my story. The Gemara goes on, Sholchula, so the Chachamim, upon hearing her request, they sent back, Kino at morera solenu lebein humos. If we make Purim into a celebration, it will arouse the anger of nations upon us, because what in effect is being celebrated? We're celebrating the Jewish defeat of a Gentile people. And that, of course, would arouse hate. Sholcholahem, so Esther said, listen, by establishing Purim as a holiday, that's not going to add any more hate to the fires of hate than already exist, because Kvar Ksuvani al Divrei Hayomim Lamalche Modai Oporas, the secular records of the kings of Modai and Paras already record the events of Purim, the events, namely the Jewish battling of their enemies and subsequent defeat. So, as far as your reticence to establishing Purim as a holiday and the reading of the miracle in the form of the Megillah is not founded on something one really has to worry about. The Gemara continues. This is already now a second request as presented by the Gemara on the part of Esther. Rav v'Rav Chanina v'Rav Yochanan v'Rav Chaviva Masnu. These two pairs of rabbis teach. We skip the brackets momentarily. Sholchu lahem Esther lachachomim. Esther had sent to the chom kisvuni lidoros. Now, kisvuni lidoros, as we explained earlier, she's requesting that the Megillah Esther be included amongst the holy books of the Tanakh, one of the Sifrei Tanakh. Sholchu lo, they sent back, well, we can't do that because halo kosafti loch shalishim. This posuk is explained in the context of this Gemara, you see the word Shalishim, there's a reference to three. Namely, only in three places are we to commemorate battles with Amalek. Shalishim velo ribeim, three and not four. And up till this point, the three places in which we record the battles with Amalek are in Sefer Shmois, in Sefer Devarim, and in Sefer Shmuel. So three places are already accounted for as far as commemorating Jewish battles against Amalek. But we're bound by what the Pasuk says, three and not four. And if we add the Megillas Esther to the list, we're going to have four places in which we commemorate the defeat of Amalek. Before we go any further in the Gemara, we did have a bracketed section, and we indicated we skipped it in our initial reading. And the reason for that is because the word right before the brackets, the word at the end of the line that says Masnu means they taught. They taught what comes right after the brackets, Shalchu lahem Esther lachamim. They taught that Esther had sent to the chachamim her request to be recorded, Kisvuni Lidoros, to be recorded as a holy book of the Tanakh. In the brackets, there's a note, so to speak, on the part of the Gemara, and it says, Bekulei Seder Moed, in the Seder of Moed, the division of the Shas is made of six Sedarim, the division known as Seder Moed. In fact, we are learning Megillah, which is a tractate from Seder Moed dealing primarily with the holidays. Well, when you're learning Seder Moed, Kol Kihai Zuga, whenever you see these names as they appear, the four rabbis that appeared right before the brackets, so when you see these pairs, they're two and two, Kol Kihai Zuga, Chalufei Rabbi Yochanan, you would exchange or take out Rabbi Yochanan, and in his place, Ma'ayol Rabbi Yonason. Rabbi Yonason would be the name when appearing with this group of rabbis. It's Rabbi Yonason in Seder Moed, that is supposed to appear. So in fact, technically speaking, we would have read the list as Rav Rab Hanina and Rabbi Yonason for Rabbi Chaviva. And that's as per the instructions of what's mentioned in this brackets. It's interesting to note that the marking system employs a couple of different forms of markings. We have the geometric forms, and we have long point markings, long question markings. We call them, they fall under the category of long markings, and we also have brackets. Sometimes the bracketed section is much longer than this. But what's interesting to note over here is that there is a basis for the use of these brackets, as is found in Tosfos in Maseches Shabbos, Daf Nun Dalet Omid Beis. We have printed in our Shas Ozer marked Gemaras, the Tosfos in its entirety on the inside margin. You'll notice there appears a photocopy of the Tosfos from Shabbos, and if one looks into that Tosfos, he'll see how sensitive the Bali Tosfos were to Gemara structure, and we accomplished that by using the brackets. Turning back to the Gemara, we're holding at a point that the Chachamim had responded to Esther that we record in written form the battles against Amalek only in three places and not in a fourth place. Ad shemotsu lo mikra kosu b'Torah, until they found a posuk in the Torah on which they can base a fourth recording of a battle with Amalek. So the posuk in the Torah, which of course predates the incidents of Purim, but the Torah is an everlasting book from which one can extract information that applies to the future as well. So we have a pasuk that says in Sefer Shmois, Perek Yudzayin, Pasuk Yudalin. The pasuk says Ksoiv Zois Zikaron BaSefer, and now with the underlinings that you see in the next couple lines, we're going to break down this pasuk as follows: Ksoiv Zos Mashikosuv Kan Uva Mishnah Torah. That's a reference to battles. It should be pointed out that this pasuk is a reference to the battle that the Jews waged against Amalek upon the exodus from Mitzrayim, involving Moshe Rabbeinu with Yehoshua, as Yehoshua serving the leading the army into this battle. And in that pasuk it says, Ksovzos, which we're understanding to mean, record that which is taking place here in Sefer Shmos, which was a battle against Amalek, Uva Mishneh Torah, and also the fight with Amalek is recorded over there in Sefer Dvorim, in Parshas, at the end of Parshas Kisetze. The pasuk says Zikaron. The pasuk says Ksovzos Zikaron Basefer. So the word Zikaron is Ma Shikosu Benaviim. That's a reference to the battle with Amalek, as is featured in Sefer Shmuel. And Basefer equals Ma Shikosu Bemegillah. So at this point, the Rabbanan can justify an additional record in written form, namely in the form of Megillas Esther, concerning the defeat of Amalek. Ketanoi, the issue of how one looks at this posuk in Shmos Yud Zayin posuk Yud Dalet is in fact a machlokas tanoim. So we have two shitas in this source. The first shita is Rabbi Yehoshua, and the second is Rabbi Elazar HaMoldoi. You can see their names are dot underlined. The reason we dot underline their names, and as opposed to a regular underline, is because we want to use the regular underline for highlighting the different phrases from the pasuk. So the second opinion in this source will be the one that the Gemara just before the source is basing the Chachamim's acknowledging of the writing of Megillas Esther and including it as one of the Sifrei Tanakh. Kitanoi, as we said, this is a machlokas tanoim. Ksov zos, ma shikosuv kan. Zikaroin, ma shikosuv v'mishneh Torah. If you just take a minute and compare this to what was darshan from Ksov zos just a couple lines before, it's pretty easy to find. You can see we have it underlined Ksov zos. There, it was explained to include not only Kan Sefer Shmois, but also Mishneh Torah being a term for Devarim. Here in this source, the Tanakhama says that Sefer Devarim is alluded to only by the phrase Zikaron. And the final phrase, Basefer, Ma Shikosu Benavim, Divrei Rabbi Yeshua. So according to Rabbi Yeshua, Esther is not alluded to in this pasuk. As far as Rabbi Yeshua is concerned, therefore, there is no scriptural reference to the writing, the recording of the Nes Purim in a written Megillah form. Rabbi Elazar HaMoldoi Omer, Ksov Zos, Mashikosuv Kan Uva Mishneh Torah. This is similar to what we said before the source. And it's based on Rabbi Elazar HaMoldoi then that the above drosha before the source was made. Because he learns from Ksov Zos not only Sefer Shmos, but also the recording of the battle of Amalek in Sefer Dvarim. Zikaron Mashikosuv Benaviim, Vasefer Mashikosuv Megillah. We have a slash mark in the Gemara which indicates that which follows is a new idea. I want to caution or point out that even though we do have this slash mark, there will be a reference later in the Gemara back to Shitas Rabbi Yeshua, and we'll be able to accomplish that through the use of arrows that are to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. In the meantime, since we put a slash in, this indicates that we have a new sugya on hand. Let's glance at the outside margin under the Nosei heading, the topic heading, Tumas Yodayim B'yachas L'Megillas Esther. A word or two should be said before getting into this, and that is that the Chachamim instituted an automatic state of tuma applying to the hands with regard to one who handles a book of the Tanakh, of the holy writings. And the reason for this is because years ago people used to store truma is a tithe given to a kohanim, and truma is something that has a level of holiness associated with it. They would store their truma in the same place that holy scrolls were kept. For example, in the Aron Kodesh, people figuring that truma is holy, the holy writings are also holy, and that's a proper place to store the truma. Unfortunately, truma being a food item, it's talking about tithes set aside from different types of agricultural products. What happens is the mice would come and nibble on the truma, and also mice are not that particular with what they nibble on. They also would nibble on the holy writings, the holy scrolls, so as to preserve the holy scrolls and protect them from the mice. We instituted, the Chachamim instituted, that it should be known that if one touches a holy scroll, his hands will become tameh. And if his hands become tameh, his hands will then ruin the truma. So people would know to keep the truma away from the holy scrolls, being that the holy scrolls would be, in effect, a source of tumah that could then have negative effects on the truma. So that's called tumas yadayim. But tumas yadayim was instituted to those things that are of a holy nature, a scroll that's of a holy nature. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Esther eino mitama es hayadayim. Shmuel says that the book of Esther, the scroll of Esther, does not convey the tumah that we just spoke about. The Gemara asks, Lameimer desavar Shmuel Esther lav beruach hakodesh nemra? Are you suggesting that maybe that Shmuel's opinion may be that the book of Esther, the Megillas Esther, was not written with divine inspiration? Omar Shmuel, Esther Beruach HaKodesh Nemra. But Shmuel said that it was written with divine inspiration. And we may point out, based on the Gemara a little bit later, not only does Shmuel hold that, but he also offers a proof to that effect, a proof that is stronger than the proof offered by a number of other Tanoim, Shmuel being himself an Amora. He offers a proof for this, and we'll see this in a Gemara later, how Esther was Beruach HaKodesh. It was written with divine inspiration, and as such, it must be of a holy nature. And if that's the case, so the question comes back, why would Shmuel say that Esther is not Mitama Es HaYadayim? The Gemara answers, Ne'emra Likrois, Velo Ne'emra Lichtov. Esther was, the story of Esther, as it's recorded, is in fact composed through divine inspiration, through Ruach HaKodesh. So that there is a mitzvah to read the story of Megillas Esther and realize that the text itself, that the storyline, is divinely inspired. However, it was not given over to be written in a scroll form. And therefore, since it was not commanded, according to the approach that Gemara is taking right now, according to Shmuel's approach, in explaining why it's not Mitamas Yadayim, that even though there is an obligation to read the story of the Purim events, nevertheless, there is no mitzvah to have it written in a scroll form. And hence, there's no Tumas Yadayim, because Tumas Yadayim is that which is conveyed through a scroll that was supposed to be written down in scroll form, in a holy scroll form. So that even though the story content is divinely inspired, the necessity of writing it in a holy scroll form, that it was never dictated. And therefore, if one does, being that the story is in fact recorded, in order for it to be conveyed verbally, that nevertheless the written form of it does not convey Tumas Yadayim. Meisvei, the Gemara raises a question from a Tanaic source, and at the end of this Tanaic source, you'll notice we have a dashed underline, and it says there, Ve'ester mitamen es hayadayim, mentions different books, different holy writings, and amongst the holy writings that are cited in this source is the book of Esther, and it says that it is mitam yadayim. So you have a Tanaic source which would, on the surface, seem to counter Shmuel, who was an Amora. There are other sources, other holy writings that are alluded to in this source, but they're not the focus of our attention. So let's begin. Meisvei, Rabbi Meir Oimer, Koheles Eino Mitama Es Yadayim, Umachloikes B'Shir Hashirim. That everyone will agree, according to Rabbi Meir's opinion, that Koheles does not convey Tumas Yadayim, but there is a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel concerning Shir Hashirim. Rabbi Yossi Omer Shira Shirim Metames Yadayim Umachlukes Bekoheles. He says just the opposite. Rabbi Shimon Omer Koheles Mikulei Beishamai Umichumrei Beisilel. Rabbi Shimon acknowledges that Koheles is a machlokes between Beishamai and Beisilel, similar to what Rabbi Yossi had said. However, he just points out that as far as what each one holds, Beis Shammai holds that Koheles will not convey Tumas Yadayim, and Beis Hillel will say it does. Avol, Rus v'Shir Hashirim v'Esther metamen es Hayadayim. But as far as these books are concerned, they will convey Tumas Yadayim. Well, we see from here that Esther is metamas Yadayim. That's contrary to Shmuel. The Gemara answers, who, namely Shmuel, the Omar Rabbi Yeshua. He bases himself on the Tana Rabbi Yeshua. Notice we have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. If you scan up the page, you'll find a parallel arrow pointing to the line where Rabbi Yeshua's name appears at the end of the line. He, let us just recount, was the opinion that did not find a scriptural reference to the book of Esther. Therefore, according to Rabbi Yeshua, the obligation to record in written form the book of Esther does not have a basis. And therefore, if one does record the book of Esther in a written form, according to Rabbi Yeshua, it does not have holiness. And as such, it's not going to be, if one does record it, it won't convey Tumas Yodayim. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Nasi Omer, Keheles Eino Metames Yodayim, B'nei Shechochmosoi Shel Shlomo Hi. Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that Keheles does not convey Tumas Yodayim because it's not a work that was inspired by divine inspiration. In other words, it's not written Beruach HaKodesh. Omru lo, the Chachomim responded to Shimon Menasi and said, "V'chi zu bilvad Omar, do you think that all that Shlomo's, all that he ever recorded was the book of Koheles? V'alo kvar ne'mar v'yedaber shloshes alof in Moshal. Shlomo has authored 3,000 parables, the Omer, and there's another pasuk that says, Al toisef al devorov." In order to appreciate this, first we'll glance at the Rashi found on the little, almost halfway down the page. V'halo kvar ne'mar v'yedaber, u'koheles kvar ne'mra. Koheles was already recorded, and you have the book of Koheles, and you've got these 3,000 parables of King Solomon, and they are not recorded in writing. It's simply, the pasuk indicates that he authored 3,000 mishalim. Rashi says, "V'kevan dolo kosav es kulan," and since he didn't write all of them, "Lamadito shema shekosav ruach chodeshoye." We learn from here that which was written was in fact with divine inspiration, and hence it would convey tumas yodayim. The Gemara asks, "My v'omer, what do I need the second pasuk in this particular discussion?" After citing the pasuk of Vayedaber Shloshes Alofim Moshal, we could have already derived the uniqueness of Sefer Koheles in that. Besides Koheles, he had many other thoughts of wisdom, and yet they are not recorded. So wouldn't that alone show you that Koheles is divinely inspired? What do I need the second pasuk of Al Tosef Al Dvorah for? So the Gemara explains, after asking Maivi Omer, what's the need for that additional pasuk in the source? The Gemara answers, V'chi Teimo, without the additional pasuk, I might have thought, Meimar Tuva Omar. Shlomo said many, many points of wisdom. De'i boy ichtiv, u de'i boy lo ichtiv. And as far as writing them, that was purely optional. And therefore, one might have concluded anything that he wrote were simple ideas that came on his own, words of wisdom, parables and analogies that came on his own, and none of it was necessarily divinely inspired. That's what I would have thought had I not had this additional pasuk. However, Toshma Al Toisif Al Dvorov, this second pasuk says, you shall not add to that which is already written. The fact that there's a warning, do not add to that which is already written, that shows us that which was already written is in a class by itself. We don't want anything added to it. Now, why is that? Because that which is already written, and we mentioned this is a reference to Koheles, that was divinely inspired. It's something that goes beyond the simple issue of wisdom per se, but it's a book of divinely inspired, and therefore Koheles, according to the Chachomim, who are responding to Rabbi Shem Menasio, should be mitama es hayodayim. You notice we have a slash in the Gemara indicating that that which follows is once again a new idea. The topic heading we've assigned to the upcoming Gemara on the outside margin, no say, Esther Baruch HaKadosh Nemo. Of course, we made allusions to this earlier. The issue dealt with here is the compilation of the Purim story being divinely inspired. Namely, the storyline, the content of the Megillah is of a Ruach HaKodesh nature. Hoychochos lekach, we will see proofs to this, mi tanoim v'amoroyim, from earlier scholars and later Gemara, Amoroyim era scholars. B'malacha Gemara, in the course of the Gemara, you pirchois al hoychochos tanoim, we will have rejections or challenges to the proofs that the tanoim cite. V'yishoer hoychochas Shmuel v'oid Amoroyim. At the end of this Gemara, Shmuel's proof, he is an Amora, he's a later period scholar, yet, even though he's a later period scholar, and we have an acceptance that later scholars are of a lesser nature, if you will, for lack of better expression, than the earlier scholars. But in ironically, the proof provided by this later scholar, namely Shmuel, relative to the Tanoim, his proof remains while theirs are rejected. In addition to Shmuel, the Gemara will provide two more Amoroyim who will give us their opinions as to how one can know that Esther was Beruach HaKadosh. We'll see later toward the lower part of the page Rav Yosef and Rav Nahum Ritzuk. We've assigned them numbers 6 and 7 as those are the last of this list of opinions as to Esther being Beruach HaKadosh. As we approach the Gemara, we'll notice how we fine-tuned our markings. When it came to the names of the Tanoim, we numbered them 1, 2, 3, and 4, and circled the numbers. When it comes to the Amoroyim, we will be numbering them, continuing the numbering beyond 4, namely 5, 6, and 7, but those numbers, the Amoroyim numbers, will mark with small parentheses around the numbers as opposed to a circle, so that we emphasize this distinction. The Gemara, Tanya, the Tanaic source, Rebbe Lezer Omer, Esther Ruach HaKadosh Nemar, Shnemar, Vayomer Homon Belibo. The author of the Book of Esther was able to write, and Homon said in his heart, namely he thought to himself. Well, how could the author write such a line, in other words, record Haman's thoughts, if he didn't have a divine communication to that effect? Rabbi Akiva Omer, Esther Ruach HaKadosh Nemar, Shnemar, Vati Esther Noses Chein Beinei Kol Ro'eha. Esther was found to be found grace in the eyes of all those that beheld her. Well, how does the author know that all those that looked upon her found her to be graceful? Unless he, of course, the author knew this through some kind of, we'll call, inside information through divine knowledge. Number 3, Rabbi Meir Omer, Esther Beruach HaKadosh Nemra, that Esther was composed with divine inspiration. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Va'yivoda hadavor leMordechai," that the scheme of Bigson and Seresh became known to Mordechai. Well, how could it become known to Mordechai unless he had divine inspiration? Rabbi Yossi ben Dermaskis, Omer Esther Ruach HaKadosh Nemra, Shenemar, Ubabizah lo sholchu es yodam. This is a reference to the battle that the Jews waged as featured at the end of the Megillah. They defeated their enemies, and yet they took none of the spoils of battle. How can the author of the Megillah know that Jews all over the world did not take any spoils of battle? We're not dealing with some kind of sophisticated satellite system which was able to hone in on the actions of individuals miles down on Earth's surface. And yet, the author records that the Jews did not take any of the battle booty. Omar Shmuel, I havoy hasam, if I was amongst the Tanoim that were offering proofs for Esther being Baruch HaKadosh, Havi Amino Milsa Dadifo Mikulo, I would have said something better than all of the rest of them. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Kimu Vikiblu. It says that in Megillas Esther. And this is interpreted as Kimu Lamala in heavens. In the heavens, they accepted Mashikiblu Lamato, that which we accepted here on earth. Namely, just like on earth it was accepted to observe Purim, it was also, that motion was seconded, so to speak, by the heavenly court. How in the world can the author of the Megillah know what's going on in heaven unless he had Ruach HaKodesh? Omar Rava, Lekulislu Pircha, Lebar Midishmuel, Deles Le Pircha. All of the answers that we've seen, or all of the proofs that we've seen to Esther having been Beruach HaKodesh, have weaknesses to it. That's what the term Pircha means, a point of rejection, or we'll call it a weakness, with the exception of Shmuel, that has no weakness to it. There's no weak spot in Shmuel's argument or Shmuel's proof. And now the Gemara goes over each one of the Tanoim, and shows the weakness in their proofs. The Rabbi Eliezer, who had said, or had tried to prove that based on the Pasuk that says, Vayomer Homan Belibo, this Pasuk is found in Perek Vav, Pasuk Vav, and this is a Pasuk where Homan had entered the chambers of Achashverosh, and Achashverosh had asked Homan, what should be done to a person that the king feels a great debt to? The lashon of the pasuk was "Ma lasos b'ish asher melech chofetz bikoro." Then the pasuk says "Vayomer Haman b'libo," and Haman said to himself, "Lomi yachbos hamelech lasos yikor yosher mimeni? Who would the king want to do a good turn to more than me?" So the Gemara points out that is not something, in order to write that, one doesn't have to be divinely inspired. Svara hu, one could have figured that on their own. One could, the lo havi inish dechoshev l'malka kavosei. At that point, there was no person of greater importance to the king than Haman. So if the king is asking what should be done to a person that the king feels a sense of gratitude to, who else would the king feel a sense of gratitude to other than the most important person in his royal cabinet? So it goes without saying that Haman was figuring this on his own, whereas in his inner thoughts he was thinking about himself. And one could know that without having divine inspiration. Continuing in the Gemara, let's go over that phrase again. Delo svarahu, delo have inish the choshev lemalka kavosei, v'hai ki ko mafish tuva v'omar. Then that which Haman was saying, all this extravagance, namely bring out the royal clothing and the royal horse, adaite denafshe komar. He was saying that with regard to himself, that he would be the beneficiary of that. So since Haman was saying over all of this extravagance, and that was not something that was internal, he said that outright. So the author of the Megillah could say, well, he's ordering all of this extravagance. It must be that he was that's what he was thinking on his own. Hence, he would have. It's easy to have written Vayomer Haman Belibo. The Rabbi Akiva, as far as Rabbi Akiva's proof, and he said that his proof was based on Esther finding the grace in the eyes of all that beheld her. Dilma k'Reb Elozer, maybe that phenomenon was based on Reb Elozer teaching. The Omar Malamit Shikol Echad VeEchad Nidmesa Loi Kumasai. The Gemara tells us later in the Masechta that everyone who saw her perceived her as coming from their own people. So that if you have a multinational setting, every one of the different nationalities perceived her as being from their own people. So if one heard all of these different nationalities saying, oh, she's from us, it must be that she was Nosei Schein Be'enei Koroeha. And one does not need divine inspiration to come to that conclusion. When you hear everyone saying, everyone from different nations saying that she's from us. The Hal de Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir's proof that it was Baruch HaKadosh was that the plan of Bigson and Seresh to kill, to knock off Ahasuerush became known to Mordechai. Dilma k'Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, maybe the knowledge came to Mordechai not through divine inspiration, but as Reb Chiya teaches, the Omar, Reb Chiya has taught that Bigson and Seresh Shnei Tarsayim Hoyu, they were two people from a nation of people called the Tarsayim. And as a result of them coming from this nation, they spoke a language called Tursi, and Mordechai, being a member of the Sanhedrin, he happened to be knowledgeable of many languages, including this Tursi language, and he simply overheard them scheming with one another to knock off Ahasuerush, and that's how it became known to Mordechai, that because of his knowledge of their foreign tongue, he revealed their scheme. And that is accomplished without divine inspiration. V'hal de Rabbi Yossi ben Dormaskis, Rabbi Yossi proved from his standpoint that it's Baruch HaKadosh from the pasuk that indicated that the Jews took no battle booty in their war against the enemies all over the world. Well, how does you will ask? How does the author of the Megillah know they took none of the spoils? Dilma Pristiki Shodur. It may be that messengers were sent out all over the world during this time. We could say something like a news corps, the news industry, where they send correspondents out all over the world. And so something of a similar nature took place there. Messengers were sent out all over the world, and they reported that we saw the battles, and we noticed that the Jews did not take any of the spoils, and that was reported back to home base. And that's how it was known, and not through divine inspiration. Shmuel's teaching that indicates the heavens accepting the terrestrial or the earthly acceptance of Purim as a holiday, that has no weakness in it, and that shows clearly that the one who wrote such a pasuk, Kimu v'Kiblu, must have had divine inspiration. Omar Avino, Hainu Damri, and she, based on what we just witnessed, that Shmuel survived when all the Tanoim did not, based on this, people say, Tova chada pulpatu charifta mi moli tzoni kori. Better is one sharp pepper. Pepper is, relatively speaking, a small item, and its taste is perceived more than a whole basketful of curry. Curry being some type of large vegetable. So if we were to say that stronger is the taste of one small sharp pepper than a whole basketful of pumpkins, this is the analogy of Shmuel being small relative to the greater Tanoim, and yet his explanation lasted where theirs did not. The Gemara continues with more proofs from Amoroyim that Esther was written Baruch HaKadosh. Rav Yosef Omar Menhocha, from the following pasuk, Vimei Purim Ho'ela Lo Ya'avru Mitoch HaYehudim, that these days of Purim, the 14th and 15th of Adar, celebrated as the days of Purim, will never part from the Jewish people. So you have a pasuk written with certainty regarding the future. How can a mortal write such a thing unless he had divine inspiration? And as you can see, well over maybe 2,500 years later, we are still celebrating that very holiday. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok Omar Mehocha, he says you can see the Ruach HaKodesh element of Sefer of Megillas Esther from the following pasuk. It says Vizichram Lo Yosuf Mizaram. This proof is very similar to the proof that Rav Yosef brought, that the memory of the Purim incident will not depart from all future seed, from all future generations. In order to write such a thing, one would have to be divinely inspired in order to know that. Continuing in the Gemara, Umatonos Levyonim. Toni Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef provides a Tanaic source. The pasuk says, "Umishloach monos ish l're'ehu." Monos, portions, is an expression in the plural, and it says one man sends plural portions to a singular friend. The result of this is shtei monos l'ish echad, two portions to one friend. That's what the obligation of mishloach monos is. Two portions of food to one receiver. The pasuk also says umatonos le'evyonim. Matonos is in a plural, and evyonim means the poor is also in a plural form. Well, what's the result? Shtei matonos. One has to give two portions. We'll say two gifts le'shnei b'nei adam to two people. The result of this is really one matona, one gift. To one gift per poor man. So you'll end up giving a singular matana to two poor people, each poor person receiving one matana. As we go on in the Gemara, we see a new geometric form as far as the sugya is concerned. We see a triangle, and we also see a double underline. This is explained in the outside margin under our Nosei Mivne heading. The triangle represents names of rabbis, what we call Rebbe, and three dots, leaving it open for changing the names of the Rav as the stories unfold. And we have the expression Shadar Leis, that means he sent. This is found with a double underline. What will we be experiencing here? Dugmois shel mishlochei monos sheshochu echod lasheni. We'll see different examples of mishloach monos, different examples, different stories involving rabbis sending mishloach monos to their friends. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia shadalei the Rabbi Shaya atmo digla tilsa. Rabbi Yehuda sent to Rabbi Shaya a cut of meat, an atmo is a piece of meat. Igla tilsa is a calf. That's the third born from its mother. So a piece of meat from a slaughtered third calf. Vigarva de chamra and a flask of wine. Shalach le, Rav Hoshaya, who was the receiver, sent a message that said, Kiyamto bonu rabenu mishloach manos ish l're'ehu. But what you sent me, through what you sent me, you fulfilled the requirement of the pasuk that says "Umishloach manos ish l're'ehu." In other words, the portion of meat and the flask of wine constituted two portions, and it was sent to Rav Hoshaya, one person, in accordance with the pasuk. As we go on in the Gemara, we will have more stories of Mishlochei Manos. You can see the use of the triangles that indicates that. But we also have a Maisa, a long incident. That's indicated by the word Maisa that's written to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text that's encircled with a vertical dashed line, indicating that all of the lines parallel of the Gemara opposite this vertical dashed line form the incident. Rabo shoder lei lemori barmar biyad Abaye is going to serve as the messenger in this story and also in the next story. So a mishloach monos is sent by Rabo to Mori Barmar through Abaye. What did Rabo send? Maybe before we go on, just a word about Rabo. Rabo had at a certain point in his life, he became the Rosh Yeshiva, he became the head of the Yeshiva. And it's also noteworthy that, based on the Gemara elsewhere, the one who is the head of a Yeshiva is also supposed to be ensured financial stability, if not, in fact, wealth.
That point should be borne in mind as we go on in the Gemara. So we should assume that Rabbah was a man of means by virtue of the fact that he occupied that position of head of yeshiva. So Rabbah shonale lamori barmor biarabaye mole tasko de kasva umole koso kamcho de avshuna. He sent a tasko, we translate as a basket of kasva, dates, and a mole kosa, a cup or another of type of flask filled with kamcha davshuna. This is flour that's made from roasted wheat grains. It's a sweet substance. So we can even assume that people would eat that as it is. This flour that's produced from roasted wheat grains, and as we said, it's a very sweet substance. Omar Le Abaye turns to Rabbah, seeing what he is going to bring to Mori. He says, Hashta Omar Mori. Mori is probably going to react to your Mishloach Manos in a derisive fashion. He is probably going to say, here's this Rabbah, who was at this point a rich man, a man that could afford to send something of value, of expense. And here he's choosing to send these cheap items. That's going to lead him to say the following. This is a saying in Aramaic, and we'll attempt to translate it and convey the flavor of what his reaction may be. So Abaye says, once again, he says that, well, if Mori receives this Mishloach Manos from you, he'll probably say the following, Ichak lo malko lehevei dikulo mitzavrei lo nachis. The chak lo is the villager. If the villager, who is a simple man, if he becomes a king, that's the idea of Rabbah becoming the Rosh Yeshiva type of king, head of the yeshiva. So when the villager becomes a king, dikula, a basket. The basket referred to here is the basket that a cowhand or shepherd would carry around with him to feed his animals. So they would wear this basket around their necks as they went out into the fields. So here the farmer becomes a king, but the basket he never lowers from his neck. In other words, he keeps the signs of his simpleness with him all the time. And the idea being that you, Rabbah, could afford to send something of much greater value, but you're sending this cheap stuff as if you are still from your early days. Okay, so be it. So it seems from the Gemara that this gift, this Mishloach Manos, was sent anyway. Hodar shoderle ihu mole taska de zangvilo umole kosa de pilpota aricha. Mori Barmar sent back a basket full of zangvila, the type of spice, and a flask of pepper, long peppers, pilpalta aricha. Omar Abaye, who is once again serving as the messenger, in this case he's coming from Mori with the zangvil and pilpalta to Rabbah. Abaye notices this gift, this Mishloach Manos, and says to Mori, Hashta Omar Mar, Rabbah's probably going to say, Ano Shadri Le Chulia. I sent him at least sweet things. Remember the dates and the flour from those roasted grains, which we indicated was sweet. I sent him sweet things. V'yihu Shadri Churfan. He's sending me back sharp things. The zangvil and pilpalta being spices of a sharp nature. The Gemara goes on with Abaye. Now, it seems this Gemara is in effect a continuation of the story above, but here Abaye is describing himself as in his journey from one to the other. Omar Abaye, Kinafki mi bei mar, when I left Rabbah's house, Hava Savana, I had eaten, I was satisfied. After all, it's Purim day, it's a day in which we we encourage eating. And he says, well, when I left Rabba's house, I was savana. I was satisfied. Kimatoi lahasam. When I arrived there at Mori's house, krivuli shisin tsoi, the shisin mini kadera, they served me shisin, 60. Tsoi are bowls of 60 bowls of 60 different types of dishes, of different food items. The achli buhu, shisin plugi, and I ate 60 pieces. In other words, I tasted from each bowl. Ubishulo basraisa, the last thing I tasted, havu korolate sli kedar. The name of that was some type of roasted meat called sli kedar. Uboi lemechas tso abasra. And I was prepared to chew the dish after it. It could mean it could be a figure of speech. I was going to lick the bowl, as we might say, or I was prepared to chew the plate. The idea being that even though I had just finished eating 60 pieces of these different foods, he ate it with a feeling of hunger, a ravenous appetite. Omar Abaye. Abaye now observes of what he just said. He observes himself and says, "Hainu damri inshi." My behavior bears out the common saying, "Kofin anya v'lo yoda." The poor man, probably referring to himself, the poor man can be famished and he's not even aware of how hungry he is. Inami, another saying that's appropriate for this story, "Ravacha lebesima shriach." There's loosely translated, there's always room for dessert. Now, namely, even though someone may have eaten a big meal and has eaten enough to satisfy anyone's appetite, well, when they're served the chocolate cream pie and with the whipped cream on it, they always seem to have room for that. Abaye bar Oven, Rabbi Chanina bar Oven, Mechalfi Sudasayu Ladadi. These two Rabbonan, one ate by the other, and the next year the other ate by the first one, so that they alternated their Sudas Purim, their Purim meals. They alternated year by year with each other. Omar Rava, Mechayev Inish Livsumi Bepuraya Ad Lo Yoda Bein Orur Homon Leboruch Mordechai. A person is supposed to Livsumi is an idea or it reflects becoming drunk, intoxicated, to the point at which they can no longer distinguish between Orur Homon and Baruch Mordechai. These are two, according to the Marsha, they're two extreme different situations, and yet if a person is still able to describe the difference between the curse of Homon and the blessing of Mordechai, he hasn't drunk enough. Rabba of Rabbi Zera, Ovdu Sudas Purim Bahadi Hadadi. Rabba and Rabbi Zera got together for their Sudas Purim. They ate that together. Ifsum, they became intoxicated. Kom Rabba Shachte Rabbi Zera. Here, if we offer a literal translation, this Gemara will be a certain eyebrow raiser. So, first, the literal translation is Rabba arose in his state of intoxication and slaughtered and killed or murdered Rabbi Zera. Lamachar boi rachmi v'achye. The next day, Rabba prayed and brought Rabbi Zera back to life. Lashana amarle. Next year, Rabba suggested Nesi morven avet sudas purim b'hadi adadi. Let's have sudas purim together again. Amarle. Rabbi Zera says back, Lo b'chol shaito v'shaito misrachish nisa. Not at every moment does a miracle occur. In other words, he didn't want to take a chance. True, he was brought back to life last year. He's not sure that it will work again. As we said, that story as it is would probably be a true eyebrow raiser. The Marsha offers a more moderate presentation of the story, and that it indicates that Rabba got up and shechted Rabbi Zera, it means that Rabba prevailed upon Rabbi Zera to drink way beyond his normal drinking capacity. As a result of Rabbi Zera's imbibing such a great quantity of alcoholic beverage, he became very sick. and he became so sick that it appeared that he was about to die. And the prayer that was referred to in this Gemara, where it said "Lamocher boy rachmi v'achye," the prayer referred to is that Rabbo's intense praying for the recuperation of Rabbi Zera was effective. And with that shot, we can explain things on a more understandable fashion. However, there is the very interesting literal translation of the Gemara that leaves some room for additional thoughts. Back into the Gemara, Omar Rava, Sudas Purim, Shochla Balaila, Lo Yotze Yadecha Vaso. A person who eats his Sudas Purim at night does not fulfill his obligation. My Taima, why is that? The Gemara cites the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Yemei Mishte V'Simcha Ksiv. Yemei meaning daytime. Daytime for Mishte, for the meal. Rav Ashi Havi Yosef Kameda Meimar. Rav Ashi was in the presence, he was sitting in the presence of Ameimar. Noga V'Lo Osu Rabbonon. Noga became late, and the Rabbonon, the Talmidim, the students, did not come to the base medrash. Omar Le, my time alo asu rabbonon. So Ameimar asked, well, why aren't the students coming? It's late. And we're talking, of course, on Purim day. Why aren't they coming to learn? Omar Le, so Rav Ashi suggested, Dilma Tridi Besudas Purim. Maybe they're preoccupied with their Sudas Purim. Omar Le, so Ameimar asks in return, Velo have efshir lemichla b'urta. Could they not have eaten it last night? At night, which is generally speaking not the time for sitting in the yeshiva, they should have eaten their Sudas Purim then, making themselves available to come to learn in the base medrash by day. Omar Lei, so Rav Ashi says back, Lo Shmia Lei Lamor Hodim Arava, are you not familiar with what Rava teaches? Sudas Purim Shochla Balayla Lo Yotzi Dechavaso. If you're that one who eats Sudas Purim at night does not fulfill his obligation, so your suggestion to them is not accurate. Omar Le Lo Shmieli. Ameimar says, well, I really never heard that teaching, and thanks for informing me. Tona Mine Arboyim Zinin. He, Ameimar, went over this 40 times. The Domi Lei Kemanda Monach Bikise. And after having reviewed it so many times, he felt he got it. And the Gemara uses the expression, it felt that it was sitting in his pocket. Ein Bein Yom Tov L'Shabbos Al Oichel Nefesh Bilvad. There is no difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov, with the exception of Oichel Nefesh, of Malachas, activities that one does in the realm of food preparation, where on Shabbos things like cooking and baking would be forbidden. On Yom Tov, they would be permitted. The fact that the Mishnah says that there is no difference other than that, when in fact there really are many other differences, the Mishnah here is focusing on that which is allowed and not allowed by way of activities. However, the Mishnah is not dealing with the realm of punishments. With regard to the realm of punishments, there's a significant difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov, but that's not the topic of this Mishnah. The Mishnah is dealing with the issue of activities permitted and forbidden. So as far as the Mishnah is concerned, there's no difference between permitted activities or forbidden activities between Shabbos and Yom Tov, with the exception of food preparation matters, cooking and baking. Those are allowed on Yom Tov and not allowed on Shabbos. We can infer from this Holinyan Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. However, with regard to items that or activities done not in terms of preparing the food, but pre-preparation of food, Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. For example, sharpening a knife. Sharpening the knife comes under this category of Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. You're not preparing the food itself, you're preparing that, or you're fixing that which is needed for the food preparation. That, as far as we are concerned, Zeh V'Zeh Shovin. Yom Tov and Shabbos are equal in being both days. Machshirei Ochel Nefesh would be forbidden. Mas Nisan Dolo Krav Yehuda. Well, this Mishnah, with its inference regarding Machshirei Ochel Nefesh, does not conform to the opinion of Rav Yehuda. In other words, it differs with Rav Yehuda Desanya. We will see Rav Yehuda very shortly in the following source. Ein Bein Yom Tov L'Shabbos Ochel Nefesh. the only difference between them, Shabbos and Yom Tov, according to the Tanakhama, is just like our Mishnah, the issue of the food preparation itself. Rabbi Yehuda Matir, Af Machshirei Ochanefesh. Rabbi Yehuda, with regard to Yom Tov, allows even Machshirei Ochanefesh. And we used an example before of the sharpening of a knife. My time of the Tanakhama, the Gemara, as you can see with the squiggle underlining, will be featuring a back and forth discussion. What does each one do with the other one's sources, other one's psukim? Before we go on in the Gemara will be citing a pasuk from Shmois, Perek Yud Beis, pasuk Tezayin. On the margin, in the margin of the Gemara, you will see this pasuk is recorded. And it says, we'll read the pasuk first, being that the Gemara will quote excerpts from the pasuk. The pasuk says, Uveyom HaRishon Mikro Kodesh, Uveyom HaShvi'i Mikro Kodesh, Yelochem. On the first day and the seventh day are days of holiness, days we proclaim as holy. Kol melacha lo ye'aseh bohem, all types of melacha, constructive activities, one is prohibited to do on those days. Ach asher ye'ochel l'chol nefesh hu levado ye'aseh lochem, with the exception of activities that are done for food preparation. That alone one is allowed to do on the holiday. My time of the Tanakhama. What is the reasoning or the source for the Tanakhama forbidding Machshirei Ochel Nefesh on Yom Tov? Omar Kra. The pasuk says, who? The word who is a limitation expression, or exclusionary. Velo Machshirov. The pasuk had said, who levado ye'oseh lochem? Namely, the Ochel Nefesh activities, that alone is what you are allowed to do. We can infer, but not the Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. Rabbi Yehuda, who does allow Machshirei Ochel Nefesh, where does he get that from? Lochem. The Pasuk said that. It said, Hu levado yaseh lochem. And from lochem, he understands, lochem lechol tzorchechem, that you are allowed to do on Yom Tov anything that you need with regard to food preparation. And that anything will include even Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. The idach nami hoksiv lochem. Well, the Tanakhama, what does he do with the word lochem? After all, the Tanakhama was limiting. What does he do with this lochem expression? He says, he has 2 points he learns from it. Lochem velo lo v'kuchavim. One is allowed to practice ochel nefesh, direct ochel nefesh, food, the actual food preparation for Jews and not for idol worshippers. Lochem velo leklovim, once again, for Jews and not for dogs. In other words, to cook up animal food on Yom Tov would not be allowed. V'idach nami haksiv hu, Rabbi Yehuda, who was expansive in his approach, including machshir ochel nefesh, what does he do with the limitation expression of hu? So the Gemara answers, ksiv hu, uksiv lochem. You have a push and pull situation here. You've got hu, which is exclusionary, and you've got lochem, which is inclusionary. What do you do with these two words? The Gemara explains, kan b'machshir and shefshir lasus merv yom tov. If you have a situation of machshirei ochel nefesh that you could have done erev yom tov. Let's give an example. Let us say you had a knife that was notched or dulled erev yom tov. Well, you had a chance to sharpen it up on erev yom tov, and you didn't. You are not allowed to sharpen it on Yom Tov itself. Even Rabbi Yehuda won't go that far. So that limitation is learned, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, from the word hu. Kan, the lochem, which allowed machshir ochel nefesh, that's referring to b'machshir and shi'ef shalasos on erev Yom Tov, situations that you could not have done at erev Yom Tov. For example, let's say the knife became notched or dulled on Yom Tov day itself, so that you couldn't have done anything about it erev Yom Tov. Its problem arose on Yom Tov itself. Being that that's the case, Rabbi Yehuda makes an allowance for machshirei ochel nefesh of that nature on Yom Tov. And that's derived from the word lochem, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned. Ein bein Shabbos liyom HaKippurim, elo shezeh zdoino b'dei Adam, v'zeh zdoino b'koreis. As the Mishnah proclaims that there is no difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur, and here the emphasis is on, we'll say, the punishment aspect. There is no difference between them as far as malachas are concerned, constructive activities. They're prohibited on both cases, Shabbos and Yom Kippur, in the same way, with the difference being that the penalty for Shabbos violation is bidei odom. Namely, there is misas beis din. Beis din can conceivably get involved. If a person is, let's say, warned against violating Shabbos and he declares that he doesn't care and he knowingly is going to violate Shabbos, beis din can execute the individual, and that's accomplished through stoning. However, with regard to Yom Kippur, zez dono because if a person violates knowingly Yom Kippur, beis din does not get involved. His punishment is what's called bidei shamayim, at the hands of heaven. Heaven carries out the kores penalty. The kores penalty, different explanations are offered to it. It could be a shortening of one's life. It could be the passing of one's children. But whatever it is, for our purposes, it means a punishment that's bidei shamayim, non-human intervention when it comes to punishments for Yom Kippur. We infer from this Mishnah, however, when it comes to financial restitution as a result of damages caused on Shabbos or Yom Kippur, the same halacha will apply to both, namely, no payment is made. There is a concept that if one commits a singular act, but in that act there are two penalties that arise, we mete out only the more severe penalty to the offender. So that in the case of, let us say, someone burnt some neighbor's heap of grain on Shabbos. So what is involved there? There's a Shabbos violation, namely the act of burning, and there is a financial violation in the sense that you ruined someone else's property. How do we deal with such a situation? So we say, kom le b'derabba mine. We carry out the more severe penalty. And whether it be court execution or kores, those represent a more severe penalty than expecting someone to pay for damages. As a result of that, he does not have to pay in either case, nor in the Shabbos violation or the Yom Kippur violation. Moni masnisin. Our Mishnah conforms to whom with regard to this this in mind? So the Gemara answers, Rabbi Nechunya ben Akonahi. It is like the teaching of Rabbi Nechunya. Desanya, we have a brisa in which you will see this idea reflected. Rabbi Nechunya ben Akonahi, Oises Yom Kippur l'Kishabbos l'Tashlumin. Rabbi Nechunya used to parallel Yom Kippur to Shabbos with regard to financial restitution, namely the exemption from needing to make financial restitution in the case of damages inflicted on either one of those days. Ma Shabbos Mitzchayav B'Nafshei U'Potter B'Nafshei Shlumin. Just like with regard to Shabbos, a person becomes guilty of a capital offense, namely subject to execution, U'Potter B'Nafshei Shlumin, and as a result of that, he is exempt from financial restitution. Af Yom Kippurim. So too with regard to Yom Kippur, Mitzchayav B'Nafshei. Here, his life penalty is in the form of kores, so it too is a form of mischayav b'nafsho, and therefore poter min hatashlumin. There too, he is exempt from the need to make financial restitution. As you can see, we have a slash mark indicating that which follows is a new point of discussion. As we go on in the Gemara, before we read the Gemara, we could take note of the fact that we had a topic heading for this last discussion regarding financial institutions. So one can, at his leisure, glance at the no say heading regarding that. We have a new no say combined with mivne heading, and you can see that on the outside margin. And you see a house form appearing in two directions: one point facing up, and the other point facing down. The explanation that accompanies this sugya is as follows. Deos, these house forms represent opinions, cholkois, deos cholkois, differing opinions. Im hachachomim, is it true or is it so, will have opinions regarding the issue of whether the chachomim, im hachachomim cholkin al Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel. Can it be? Is it accurate to say that Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel is alone in his opinion? Shomar Chayiv Chayve Krisus Shiloku, people who are guilty of Kores, that received lashing, Niftaru Midei Krisosam, from the fact that they were lashed, they become exempt from the heavenly penalty of Kores. For example, let us say a person was about to do malacha on Yom Kippur. Now, we know that Yom Kippur carries with it a Kores penalty. Let us say two witnesses came up to the potential offender and said, hey, no, if you write your letter or sew that article of clothing, you will be guilty of a Yom Kippur violation and you deserve to be lashed. Let's say such a thing happened. Two witnesses warned a person that he'll receive lashing for the violation of Yom Kippur. And then he does it anyway. He violates Yom Kippur. The offender is brought to court, receives lashes. So according to Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, such a person is no longer subject to the Kores penalty. We've added here in parentheses, L'cha'oro mashma de l'shitaso. On the surface, it would appear, according to Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, Oin shel Yom Kippur shu b'kores, the penalty for Yom Kippur, which is generally assumed to be kores, gam kein bidei adam. There is also an aspect of human involvement. We use the expression bidei adam before when we spoke about Shabbos. Court execution is a form of punishment through human involvement. If Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, if his position is to be accepted, he in effect is saying that Yom Kippur also is punishable by human involvement, being that there is a potential to mete out lashes for a Yom Kippur violator. So lashing is similar to an execution in the sense that both are bidei adam. Let us now turn to the let's turn to the continuation of our markings. We have the volcano forms that will appear in the sugya. Lefi hadeos, according to the opinions that are represented by the house form, the inverted house form, lefi hadeos shesoveris de mishnosenu eino mar'e de chachomim chokin arabi Hananya ben Gamliel, we will see opinions that suggest the Chachomim are not at odds with Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. De mashma Yom Kippur bidei shamayim bilvad. Once again, that moni mas nisin. If you hold that the Chachomim agree with Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, namely that Yom Kippur is liable to punishment bidei adam, then moni mas nisin. Who will our Mishnah be like? De mashma Yom Kippur bidei shamayim bilvad. From the simple reading of our Mishnah, it appears that Yom Kippur is strictly accounted for by heavenly punishment. So that will be an issue the Gemara will deal with. We will see, with regard to the approach to our Mishnah, one approach suggesting that it's according to Reb Yitzchok, and another approach with the inverted volcano form indicating that our Mishnah nevertheless could work out like the Rabbanan as well. At this point, we have a general exposure to the ideas that will be mentioned in the Gemara, but in order to fully appreciate what we've spoken about, we must go into the Gemara itself. Tanan Hosam. There's a Tanaic source that says, Kol Chayve Krisus, all penalties, all violations that receive a penalty of Kores, now this includes Yom Kippur, She Loku, that received lashing, Niftaru Midei Krisosan. By being lashed, they thereby become exempt from Kores. In other words, if we, let's say, translate this into other words, it comes out that Yom Kippur, being that it's an example of Kores, Yom Kippur is bidei adam, is subject to a human-type punishment. Shenemar, and where do we know this idea from? The pasuk says, V'nikla achicha leinecha. Kevon Shiloka, once a person receives lashings, harehu ki'achicha, he is like your brother, meaning he's
considered a regular person without any kores penalty hovering over his head. It, once again, that through lashing, he becomes exempt from kores. Divrei Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. So the author of this idea, for right now, is Rabbi Hananya. Then we're going to again say it in other words. Yom Kippur can be viewed as something that's punishable bidei Adam, just like Shabbos. That is authored by Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. If we pause for a moment, what about our Mishnah? What would our Mishnah say about that? Well, on the surface, the Mishnah said clearly that Yom Kippur is not like Shabbos. It is different, that only Shabbos is bidei Adam, Yom Kippur is not bidei Adam. With having said that, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Chalukin Olov Chaverov al Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. Rabbi Yochanan proclaims that there's a school of rabbis that disagrees. The colleagues of Rabbi Hananya disagree with him. In other words, Rabbi Hananya holds that Yom Kippur is bidei Adam, but the others disagree. Omar Rava, Amri Bei Rav, Tanino. In fact, we have a Tanaic source to support Rabbi Yochanan's claim. Rabbi Yochanan claims that Rabbi Hananya is on his own. In other words, that others don't agree with him. So Rava says, in the name of the yeshiva of the Amri Bei Rav, in the name of the Talmidim of the yeshiva, Tanino, we have a Tanaic source that supports Rabbi Yochanan's idea that Chalukin. What's that Tanaic source? It's none other than our own Mishnah. Ein bein yom kippur l'shabbos elisha zeh zdonu b'dei adam v'zeh zdonu b'kores. There is no difference between the two other than the fact that Shabbos is b'dei adam and Yom Kippur is not b'dei adam. Yom Kippur is b'kores. Kores is a meted out punishment. The im Esau, if our Mishnah were like Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, that through Malkus one becomes exempt from Kores, then then both Yom Kippur and Shabbos would be classified as Bidei Adam, and yet our Mishnah does not say that. This shows us that our Mishnah does not agree with Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, leading to this observation of Rabbi Yochanan that Chalukin olav chaverov, and Rava backs up Rabbi Yochanan's contention. Omar Rav Nachman. You notice how the house form just flipped over. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan and combined with Rava claim that Chalukin olav chaverov al Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel, Rav Nachman will tell you they're not Chalukin. And in fact, the Chachamim will agree that if a person gets Malkus, he'll be parted from Kores, according to the Chachamim alone as well. In other words, Rabbi Hananya is not alone. That our Mishnah teaches that Yom Kippur is not Bidei Adam, which is Mashma, that it's not Shaykh on Yom Kippur Malkus. That's because our Mishnah is not the Shita of the Chachamim at all. It's a Shitas Yochid. It's a Shita of Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak alone. He happens to hold that someone who's Chayav Kores, it's not Shaykh to give him Malkus. But as far as the Rabbonon in general, they would agree with Rabbi Hananya. So that if you find our Mishnah not in agreement with Rabbi Hananya, that's not reason to say that everyone disagrees with Rabbi Hananya and leaves him out in the cold. All that suggests is that our Mishnah is in fact reflecting the opinion of an individual, a singular rabbinic opinion, and that of Rabbi Yitzchak. Let's see that now in the Gemara. Omar Rav Nachman. Ha money, our Mishnah, which is Mashma, that Yom Kippur is not Bidei Adam, Rabbi Yitzchaki, our Mishnah reflects the opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak, the Omar, Malkus Bechayvei Krisus Leko, that in the realm of penalty of violations that involve a penalty of Kores, Malkus cannot be given. Malkus is of no relevance. Desanya, and Rabbi Yitzchak has a source for his opinion. Desanya, Rabbi Yitzchak, Omer, Chayvei Krisus Bechlal Hoyu. Chayvei Krisus includes the realm of immorality. So in the Parshan, the section of the Torah that deals with immorality, it mentions there that for all of the violations of immorality, there is a kores penalty. That's what they call bichlal, meaning in the all of the they were a general pasuk, a singular pasuk that in, that that lumps together all of the arayas, all of the issues of forbidden intimacy relations. Were all taught. They were taught together as being all guilty of a punishable by kores. V'lomo yotzos kores b'choso. Why, in Parshas Kedoshim, whereas the pasuk alluded to at the beginning of line, where it said chayve krisus bichlal hayu, that's a reference to Parshas Achrei Mois in Sefer Vayikra. Why then, in the next parsha, Parshas Kedoshim, does it feature intimacy with sister leads to kores? That's what v'lomo yotzos kores b'choso. Why was it necessary to have in the next parsha, Parshas Kedoshim, a pasuk featuring kores by one's sister? Namely, that if one conducts intimacy with one's sister, there is a kores penalty. But wasn't that already known by the fact that you had a general kores penalty featuring featuring one who is involved with any form of forbidden relatives? So why was the pasuk regarding sister spelled out or featured? La duna b'kores v'lo b'malkus. The pasuk, the Torah, is trying to communicate the idea that one who is chayav kores gets only kores and not malkos. In other words, malkos cannot be given to someone who's chayav kores. That, of course, is Rabbi Yitzchak's opinion. However, following Rav Nachman's line of reasoning, the Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel, who said kores could be given if warning is issued to a chayav kores, Rabbi Chananya is not alone. That our Mishnah suggests otherwise, that's because our Mishnah is a Shitas Yochid. Rav Ashi Omar, notice, Rav Ashi is positioned marking-wise the same way as Rav Nachman, and Rav Ashi's point, therefore, is to tell me that Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel is not alone. He's not alone, a lone soldier in his cause of saying that Chayvei Krisus Shelaku Niftaru Midei Kri Hasasan, because the Chachomim would agree with that. But Rashi goes a step further and says, our Mishnah is not Rabbi Yitzchak. Our Mishnah is, in fact, those Chachomim. The question then is, if our Mishnah is, are those Chachomim that will agree with Rabbi Chananya ben Gamliel, then why does our Mishnah suggest that Yom Kippur is kores related and giving us the thing that only Shabbos is human punishable? So he explains, Afilu Teimo Rabbanan. You can set up our Mishnah like the Rabbanan. Notice with our markings, we've used a double underline with dots in it to help you contrast Rav Nachman's approach to the authorship of our Mishnah. That was author of our Mishnah's Rabbi Yitzchak, and Rav Ashi's approach to authorship of our Mishnah, namely the Rabbanan. So then why do the Rabbanan set it up in such a way to give you the feeling that Yom Kippur is kores and seemingly not bidei Adam? The answer is as follows. Ze ikur zdono bidei Adam. Shabbos, the main penalty, is court execution. Meted out by man. Vze Yom Kippur, the main penalty is ikur zdono bikores. The main penalty is kores. But that does not exclude the possibility that if someone was warned and received lashes, that in fact he would gain exemption from the kores. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.